Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network and presented in partnership with TrekCore.com. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on September 23rd, 2021, and is current through the Star Trek Lower Decks episode, Where Pleasant Fountains Lie. So beware of spoilers. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager. And welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a 40-minute news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are multiple television shows in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone. And my guest this week is returning guest, Sam Nelson. Sam, welcome back to Weekly Trek.
Well, thanks for having me back, Alex. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, all right, Sam, you know the drill. I want to know something that's got you feeling good about Star Trek at the moment. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
All right, so if I have two things that are both simultaneously moving me at Warp 10, is that okay?
Go for it.
Wonderful. So first off, I'm a middle-aged guy. I'm in my mid-40s. I'm watching Star Trek Day. I was watching it with my wife, who's not a Star Trek fan. She's watched Picard. She gets it. But she's sitting across, I'm watching Star Trek Day, she's sitting on the other sofa, and as the Strange New Worlds video plays and Cadet Uhura is announced, I literally squealed. Like, I made a noise that I cannot describe a man of my age making, high-pitched. I was so excited, and I think I got right on Twitter later that night and messaged you, next time you have an opening, I just need to share with somebody how excited I am and how wonderful Star Trek Day was. Now, it's still weeks later, and I still can't get it out of my head. So that's number one for me, Star Trek Day. Wonderful. I love it every year. And then number two, I tweeted out a month or so ago, but this past week, I booked my tickets for the Star Trek convention in Chicago for
April. All right.
I went off what you guys say all the time. I paid for the big package, got the hotel, arranged for flights, rental car, all that good stuff. I'm excited to go to my very first Star Trek convention.
Oh, very first. Oh, how exciting.
I now have to plan for some cosplay, and I'm not shaving my beard. So everybody that I'm going to dress up as has got to have a beard. So there's probably going to be a Riker in there somewhere.
That sounds terrific. Well, Sam, I'm looking forward to seeing you in Chicago. And that's great. You were super excited about Star Trek Day because we're still doing Star Trek Day stories this week. So we have a little bit more from Star Trek Day to talk about. What do you think you are most looking forward to from the Mission Chicago convention?
It's probably just meeting folks, my extended Star Trek family on Twitter. It's probably just meeting all you guys and gals in person, face to face. And obviously being around hundreds of other Trekkers, thousands of other Trekkies, and then seeing the actors and the creatives, really immersing myself in that. I'm just jazzed. I don't know what to expect. So I'm going in eyes open, mind open, ready to just have a great time.
Well, that was the correct answer, Sam. I'm pleased to report you put us above the Star Trek actors, and that was the right answer. So you can continue with the show.
Excellent.
All right. Well, the thing I'm feeling good about Star Trek this week is I'm flashing back. I got some serious nostalgia this week, which is that for the first time in probably 10, 15 years, I set up my Playmates Star Trek The Next Generation Enterprise D bridge playset, which I received as my big present on my 8th birthday, which was 26 years ago. So you can do the math as to how old I am. And it's the same set I've had since I was 8. It's well worn. It's well used. Let's just say I recreated the crash on Viridian 3 using that bridge 100 times over because all the seats would pop off and, you know, so you could really blow things up. And it has been at my parents' house in the UK for the whole time I've had it, but obviously I don't live in the UK anymore. So it's been in their garage for the last few years. So on my most recent trip to the UK, which was a few weeks ago, I decided this is a time I'm bringing the bridge back, found all the pieces, brought them back over. And yeah, just this week, finally put everything back together. And I mean, what an incredible playset that is, probably the best Star Trek toy. In my opinion, the Bridge playset is the best Star Trek toy that has ever been put out. And I am just as mesmerized by it today as I was 26 years ago, the first time I set eyes on it, which was actually a couple of days before my birthday, because I sneaked into the room where my presents were being kept and I kind of peeked behind the plastic lining that it was being kept in and spoiled myself as to what it was. But I'm as thrilled today with it as I was then. I'm glad I finally have it again. And it's all put together. I've got no idea where I'm going to put it yet, but I'm just glad to have it again. So I've been on a bit of a, '90s toy nostalgia kick over the last week, which has been a lot of fun to revisit.
So I guess that story begs the question: did you once again reenact the Viridian 3 crash from Generation?
Not yet, because my Next Generation figures are currently all in 10 forward, which is sitting on one of my bookcases behind me. And I haven't had the heart to like take them all out and put them in the Bridge yet, but I will. It's coming. And yes, I think for old time's sake, we do need to crash the Enterprise D one more time.
One more time. There's plenty more letters in the alphabet, number one.
Exactly. All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
Yes, as I mentioned, we have still got a few newsy bits to cover out of Star Trek Day a few weeks ago, including quick comments by Alex Kurtzman that seem to indicate that the rumored Starfleet Academy series, first speculated about in 2018 when Kurtzman signed his initial 5-year deal to take over as the showrunner of the Star Trek franchise, is actually still alive and kicking. In opening remarks offered at Star Trek Day, which were done remotely because Kurtzman is shooting for one of his other projects in Spain, he said that while he was in no hurry to add to the 5 Star Trek shows that are already in production, there had been conversations about what could possibly come next, and specifically name-checked the Starfleet Academy project. I know there has been a lot of conversations about Starfleet Academy, which we are very excited about, he said. And Will, referring to Will Wheaton, who he was talking to, when we talked about there's this new generation that is going to come and it's going to inherit the problems of the old generation, what are we going to do to make the world better, to solve it? How are we going to avoid the mistakes of our elders? And how are we going to learn from the wisdom of our elders? That's a really wonderful thing to consider when you think about something like Starfleet Academy. And while the Starfleet Academy project has not been formally announced, that is a pretty whopping hint that it remains very strongly on the docket for potential shows going forward. Sam, how do you feel about the prospect of getting a Starfleet Academy show?
First off, I feel great about it. But I remember that moment during Star Trek Day exactly, because to your point, it was 100% unprompted. Unless he and Will Wheaton had maybe practice the interview ahead of time and Will left out a word that maybe was hinting towards Starfleet Academy, Kurtzman just came right out and said, let's talk about Starfleet Academy, which is a pretty big revelation if you're just kind of coming off the cuff with something. Super excited about it. You know, Kurtzman's been very direct about having different shows for different audiences, and they have done a phenomenal job of having heavy drama, action, adult animation, children's animation, with a lot more things coming down the pike. And for me, the Starfleet Academy show is just another entry point for a certain type of audience to come in that enjoys that age of show or that demographic. It's a great entry point. And Starfleet Academy has been an idea that's been bounced around in a lot of different shows, an episode here or there. I remember when I was a kid, there was a rumor that the next Star Trek movie, I think this was probably after Star Trek V, there was a potential for a Starfleet Academy movie. Yep. That Star Trek VI ended up taking the place of. So it's been an idea batted around. It's high time that we see San Francisco or Starship and cadets all over the place and really maybe bring back some old faces that can kind of cover some of that time and be teachers. And we know Miles O'Brien's there.
Yeah, this is the idea that never seems to entirely go away, but never seems to entirely get to the point of actually being made. As you say, there's been talk about some kind of Starfleet Academy project going all the way back to the late 80s when I think it was Harve Bennett was really pushing for Star Trek VI to be a return to the Academy and showing the first meeting of Kirk and Spock. That obviously didn't happen. We got shades of it in Star Trek 2009, the J.J. Abrams movie. And then when Alex Kurtzman was announced as doing this deal, there were a number of shows that were discussed in those initial press releases. Star Trek Picard, which obviously we got. Star Trek Lower Decks, which obviously we got. And then this Starfleet Academy show, which at the time they said was going to be kind of helmed by the producer duo Stephanie Savage and Josh Schwartz, who have done a lot of kind of YA teen dramas like The OC and Gossip Girl. But that was 2018. It's now 2021. The two of those have a deal with Apple now, so I don't know if they're even able to do a project with Viacom CBS anymore. So who knows if they will continue to be affiliated with the project, but it certainly sounds like, sort of much like the Section 31 show, which is much talked about but never seen, that the Starfleet Academy show is another one that kind of lives alongside it in the sort of, it's in development, but they've got five shows on. Kurtzman sort of indicated it's one out, one in at this point. And, you know, probably Star Trek Picard is going to be the first out after they finish filming this third season that they're filming right now. As far as we believe, that is probably the end of that show, which does mean that one of these other shows could step into that kind of void. And is that going to be Section 31? Is that going to be Starfleet Academy? Who knows? But exciting to hear it's still on the docket. I mean, again, that is a different kind of approach. You know, they obviously, we got Prodigy for kids and we've got these adult shows. And so something pitched right in the middle for more of the kind of teen demographic, especially, you know, with everything going on in the world and this idea that, you know, it is the youngest generation that's going to have to be the ones to really take the bull by the horns and get us out of this terrible situation that our, you know, upper generations have created for us. It does feel like it would be a really timely Star Trek show. And yeah, I'm excited to see what comes of it.
Absolutely. I have four teenagers in my house, and half of them watch a show called Outer Banks on Netflix, which is that exact sweet spot demographic of that teen, late teen angst. We've got life ahead of us, but we've got a lot of drama in our lives right now too. And they love that stuff. So this, if this could kind of tap into that vein, it'll be great.
Well, especially if it makes some Trekkies, right? Share, you know, share your passion. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, as you say, right, he very purposefully did this. You know, it's not like he backed into it and was like, oops, I shouldn't have said that, right? Like, he very purposely decided in these comments he was going to kind of lay this kind of hint out there. And it, I keep calling it a hint. It's not a hint. I mean, he just came out and said it, right? Starfleet Academy. It's something we're working on.
He's probably talked more about Starfleet Academy in the last 6 months than he has on Section 31, just with that blurb on Star Trek Day.
Yeah, I mean, that is certainly true. I mean, he told us more about Starfleet Academy in that tight 20 seconds than we really know about what Section 31 is going to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so interesting. I mean, or is it exciting to hear there's more on the way? I think, you know, we're probably just as the fact that it's been 2018 since the idea first started circulating, I would say don't hold your breath for a formal announcement in the near term, but certainly sounds like that's definitely one that's high up on the agenda when there is a space in the schedule for them to add in a new show.
I agree.
Well, Star Trek Lower Decks showrunner Mike McMahon, in a Star Trek Day interview with TrekMovie.com, came to the defense of some of the show's raunchier humor that has started to show this season. The Trek Movie crew asked about the reaction to some of the gross-out humor included in an earlier episode of this season, that being Mugato Gumato, and this was what McMahon had to say in response. You know, I've never seen Star Trek as celebrating Puritanism. I think that Star Trek has always embraced sexuality, humanism, and all sorts of great stuff. When you're making shows like this, you're trying to find those limits. Even in TNG, you've got people tugging on Ferengi ears. There's always been that kind of stuff. I think the moment that everybody has been all whipped up about has a Mugato yanking on its horn, which comedically is funny. It was one of those moments where the artists kind of pushed for it and they made me laugh. And at the end of the day, we're trying to make a show that Star Trek, but also makes you laugh. And I've got to be honest, for people that are pearl clutching and freaking out because we had a suggestive moment in an adult animated show, it's just falling on deaf ears. It still felt like Star Trek to me. Sam, how do you feel about Lower Decks' forays into raunchier humor? Have they worked for you?
I know what the show's supposed to be about. I'm a Star Trek fan, and I love adult animation. I was brought up on it when I was 20 years ago, when I was younger, watching South Park. So that kind of humor and animated humor has been with me for a long time. I appreciate it. I was watching that episode, and when the scene occurred, my mouth dropped open, and I bust belly laughed out. It was so funny. I get it. I get exactly what Mike McMahon says about the pearl clutching. Look, I grew up on the original series. I watched the episodes first. I watched TNG. There's been that strain of sexuality and pushing the limits and what can we get away with. The famous scene where the censors didn't catch it in the third season of Star Trek, where Kirk's pulling his boots on after what we assume was a sexual encounter.
Yeah,
these
right.
kinds of things. Star Trek's been doing this for 55 years. And this is just the next logical move in a series that's designed for adults. I don't let my little kids watch Lower Decks, but my 16-year-old son watches it and loves every minute of it. So there's certainly an audience that Mike's hitting on, and he's taking the nostalgia of Star Trek and he's pushing the boundaries and he's making something that's different. And that's exactly what the purpose of Lower Decks is all about, is to be different and give us something that we didn't know we wanted until we saw the first episode.
Yeah, I didn't love the Mugato Gumato joke. It felt kind of needless to me. But having said that, first of all, I totally understand where he's coming from and absolutely appreciate the position. I think a lot of that kind of question of humor comes down to personal taste. And I will say, in contrast to that, we just today, they dropped an episode where Pleasant Fountains Lie, which is itself a euphemism because it comes from a Shakespeare play. And that episode's pretty raunchy. And I loved it because what I really liked about Where Pleasant Fountains Lie, where I did not love the joke in Mugato Gumato, was this episode that just aired was about, like, all of that humor was grounded in character and in world building, and it felt very authentic to kind of, you know, this sort of backstory that they had created for and Orithio Billups of Hesperia, and, you know, all of this stuff around he's the crown prince, and if he loses his virginity, then, you know, he immediately has to take the throne, but he wants to be in Starfleet, so his mother's always trying to trick him into having sex. And there's a ton of raunchy jokes in the episode, and I loved every one of them. And I got to the end of it and I was like, huh, that's really interesting. When I got to the end of Mugato Gumato, I was like, I don't think I really, like, some of those jokes just didn't really work for me. And when I got to the end of this episode, I was like, this is one of my favorite episodes of the season. So, you know, it's always going to be a matter of personal taste and how well certain kinds of humor and how well certain jokes ultimately work for you. But for me, I think I'm totally fine with Star Trek being more risque, but ultimately, when it's grounded in character and in the story that's trying to be told, because the Mugato Gumato masturbation joke, it's a complete throwaway, right? It has nothing to do with the story of the episode itself. But all of this was really tied into that. And as a result, I really, really liked it. So, you know, I kind of did a bit of 180. I think I was maybe a little too harsh on Mugato Gumato when it came out, because I was like, you know, this is really their first time trying kind of quote unquote gross out humor, and it didn't work for me in this context. But now I've seen them trying, it wasn't gross out humor in this episode, it was just more sexual humor. Now I've seen that more kind of sexual humor being deployed in an episode and done in a different way, I actually really like it. So yeah, I was probably too hard on the earlier episode, but I loved this one that just aired today.
Well, great writers in Star Trek will give us characters that we feel as viewers earn that. So I think Discovery got a lot of pushback or a lot of criticism from a certain sect about all the cursing and all the F-bombs and
yeah,
that kind of thing that stepped out. Because at first I think it felt like we're doing this because we can, versus this is how our characters in this situation really would speak to each other. So they use it a little bit less now, but when they do use it, it's more of an earned factor. What I'm looking forward to is in another 25 years when someone goes back and remasters TOS again, and we get new effects that they go in and retcon and show the Mugato in the TOS episode doing the same thing in the corner and Kirk, a quick reaction shot of William Shatner. Oh my God, that's what I want to see.
Oh, that'll be something. That will certainly set the internet on fire. Well, Titan Books have announced a new behind-the-scenes book diving into one of Star Trek's most popular movies, that being Star Trek First Contact, set to release on April 5th, 2022. Yes, that would be First Contact Day for those of you keeping score. Star Trek First Contact, the official story of the film, is written by Joe Fordham and will include archival material, behind-the-scenes photography, concept art, production designs, and new and exclusive interviews with cast and crew. Star Trek First Contact, the official story of the film, is now available for pre-order pretty much everywhere you go to buy books. So you can basically log on to whatever your preferred website is, Amazon, indie bookstore, etc., and you will find it for pre-order. It's up for about $50 right now, US. Sam, you think you'd be picking this one up?
I do love Star Trek coffee table books. Huge, beautiful pictures and illustrations. And there's a lot of, and probably every one of us Star Trek fans will go and post our favorite or rank our list of Star Trek movies. And we may disagree on the bottom three or four, but the top three always contain First Contact. It was such a Jonathan Frakes gave us in First Contact the look that sustained it, not only in Insurrection, but in Nemesis. And you could argue that look continues in Picard. But you had the Enterprise Z, you had the Borg Queen, you had the new uniforms, you had ground shots. There's so much beautifulness in that movie. The E alone is worth its own coffee table book. So to take that behind the scenes stuff and pictures from the making of what's probably the most beloved TNG movie is just, I think it's going to be a hit. I love the behind the scenes stuff. I love what's done at Trek Corps, for example. That is just going to be a gorgeous book. And there's quite a possibility that's going to show up under my Christmas tree at some point in the future.
Yeah, this is an easy buy for me. First Contact is probably my favorite Star Trek movie because, you know, I'm a real TNG guy. I love the original series, but TNG is where my heart is. And First Contact is obviously, clearly the best of the TNG movies, even though everybody knows that Generations holds a special place in my heart. But I can definitely acknowledge that First Contact is objectively a much better movie and everything about it works. And as you say, there's so much cool stuff. I mean, I remember going to see First Contact, you know, I was probably 9 years old. My dad took me to the cinema and I was really captivated by the designs. And Titan, who's putting out this book at the time, they put out and in the UK, and then I think there was a version of it here in the US, a sort of a companion magazine to the movie that kind of had a lot of your sort of first looks at, you know, outside of being in the movie, the Borg and the Enterprise E and all of that stuff. And yeah, as you say, it was, the designs were a step up from where they'd been, and First Contact basically defined a generation of Star Trek that came after it, right? I mean, you know, the uniform flowed through to Deep Space Nine, which, you know, and the ships and the way the Borg looked, and that flowed through to Voyager and the Borg Queen, and that flowed through to Voyager and now flows through to Star Trek Picard. So this was a really seminal kind of movie for sort of resetting, or not resetting, but kind of changing the direction of the Star Trek franchise a little bit from 96 onwards, and still reverberates today. And so, yeah, and the fact that it comes out on First Contact Day, I think is a really nice touch, especially since that'll be a couple of days before Mission Chicago. So good amuse-bouche for the convention.
Yes, and so many of these books have come in the past, and I know we're going to continue to get them, but I can't talk enough about how great First Contact is. And again, I think every Star Trek fan will agree to that. But to your point, the look and those photos in Titan has made some great stuff in the past. And I know for a fact, it's just going to be a great piece to collect and add to anybody who has any real world books of Star Trek.
And lastly this week, Factory Entertainment have unveiled their latest Star Trek prop replica. And this time, they're going back to the earliest days of Star Trek The Next Generation. Yes, Factory Entertainment are now taking pre-orders for a replica of the small Type 1 cricket-style phaser from Star Trek TNG, which was mostly seen on screen during Seasons 1 and 2. This is one of the first ever true-to-size licensed replicas of the cricket phaser. I think Playmates did a version and it was like five times the size that the prop actually was. And Factory Entertainment will be producing two versions of it. A standard version with a black emitter and darker button pad when you think TNG Season 1 cricket, that's the one you think of. And then also an early Season 1 special edition that will have an all-silver emitter and a lighter button pad. That's how it appeared in Encounter at Farpoint and some of the earliest TNG episodes. Each version will come with lights and authentic sounds from the show. You can pre-order both the standard and the special editions of the Cricket Phaser prop replica at factoryentertainment.com. The standard version is available for pre-order for $274.99, and the special edition is available for $349.99 with a $50 deposit due at pre-order and the rest due as the product itself ships. And both are expected to ship to customers at some point in 2022. Sam, of all the phasers we've had in Star Trek history, which is your favorite?
When I read this article about the cricket, it would not have made my top 10 favorites. It is a gorgeous replica, though, and with the display case, it is amazing. And if you're going to make a life-size, pure one-to-one scale replica, the cricket's probably the where to start, at least. To answer your question, though, I think my favorite phaser is out there. The TNG, later season TNG phaser, the Type 2 phaser, is probably my favorite. But the Star Trek 3 phaser, the black phaser that was a little bit more of an update of the original series, is probably my secret favorite. I'm glad they did away with that nasty looking thing from Star Trek 2 and gave us a real life, kind of a really cool looking black phaser in Star Trek 3. That's probably my favorite, but I do love the Type 2 that we saw later in the Next Generation thing. It went through Deep Space Nine and Voyager.
I'm a big fan of the later Deep Space Nine and Voyager ones, the boomerang, the one that kind of bends. But I also have a soft spot for where for you, it's the Star Trek 3 phaser. For me, it's the Star Trek 5 and 6 phaser, the assault phaser, I guess they call it.
Yes.
That one is badass. That is a cool, cool phaser.
But the one, I only own one, and it was the remote control version, the universal remote of the TOS.
Yes.
Yes, I have that phaser and communicator, and look forward to getting that tricorder too.
I mean, you have to get the complete set now you've got the phaser and the communicator. Yeah, I think it's great they're doing the cricket, because I say, aside from the Playmates version, which was like three times normal size, I mean, you probably had to be like 12 feet tall in order for it to actually sit in your hand and look the way that it does on screen. This is the first time there's really been a licensed prop replica of this small version of it. Roddenberry Entertainment, when they were doing prop replicas, these sort of small runs, I don't think they ever did the cricket. They did the Dustbuster, the big early TNG phaser, the, you know, the one that really does look like a Dustbuster.
No fan of that one either.
Yeah, that one is a really ugly phaser. Sorry, Jim, but I think they're the first people to do the cricket. So, hey, if you're a phaser collector like our good buddy Jim Morehouse from the Trek Ranks podcast, hey, this is a no-brainer. And hopefully, if enough people buy it, we might see Factory Entertainment do more of the phasers, because there are other ones that either haven't been made in a long time or hasn't been a great version in a while. I mean, again, of course, you know, we know this is a high-end prop replica, so this is not for everybody. They're really expensive. I'll definitely take that as read. But if this is the kind of thing you're interested in, you know, this is a fairly standard price for a product like this, and I think it looks like a really great product. And Factory have done really great work with everything they've done so far. The Reskin Flute replica, which I have, is really terrific. And I'm really excited for more of the stuff that they have to come.
I am curious as to the list of props they're going to remake or is on their wish list and how they're select. I can see starting with the Reskin Flute, but how do you get from that a couple releases later to the cricket? And I'm curious to know what their list is and how they're picking them. What's next?
I think they're looking for things that haven't really been made before, because the second release was the Hypospray, and nobody's ever done a licensed Hypospray before.
Very true.
Like nobody's ever done the licensed cricket phaser before. And so my guess is that's maybe what they're coming at it from, is like, let's do some things that the market's never seen before. Because, you know, there is this kind of big collector community out there, and they probably have a few, you know, TNG phasers and Deep Space Nine phasers and TOS phasers, but like, do they have a cricket? You know, and you know, maybe that's the kind of thing that collectors might be interested in adding to their collection.
Then that is a good strategy to fill a market need. They're doing it right on.
All right. Well, we've talked about the facts, and now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain, but it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, I and my guest give you a wish or theory we're nurturing about any of the shows or the future of the franchise. So Sam, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
Well, I was going to go in one direction, but when we decided to talk about Starfleet Academy, and I really got the juices flowing, and I really tried to read into the quote of Alex Kurtzman. And when he went on to talk about fixing mistakes that had come before or dealing with our predecessors, I thought about what era would best be set here.
Good question.
I have to kind of believe that, and this is probably, I have a theory and a wish. The theory is that we'll continue to see favorites. And I think the time frame we might see is probably going to be set after the Dominion War. It'd be a great way to pick up the pieces and kind of plug in something. We have crossover already with Lower Decks, a few years in the future with Picard. It kind of resets an era where we could have multiple shows living and dealing with these things on opposite ends. We could maybe see a return of Chief O'Brien at the Academy. So my theory is that it'll probably be set in an era post-Dominion War where we get to see some of the ramifications of that. My wish is that they set the Starfleet Academy show in an era we don't have a lot of information on. And that's that era of during the Enterprise B run.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Mainly because I want to see ships and characters that we haven't seen in a long time. But there's a secret part of me that just wants to see Gersha Phillips take on the Monster Maroons.
Right.
And I think that would be fantastic to see some of that cool stuff. Maybe get a whole look at an era of Star Trek that we just don't get to see.
Yeah, that's very exciting. On your theory, I think you might be right. I mean, who knows, because they, you know, can set it whenever they want to, but they definitely seem to be developing more confidence with a return to the 24th century. You know, that's where Picard is set, and that's where Lower Decks is set, and that's where Prodigy is set. I mean, even those three shows are a few years apart from each other. You could very easily see a Starfleet Academy show also being set at some point within that 20-year time frame, you know, starting as early as concurrent with Lower Decks and probably going as late as, you know, whenever Star Trek Picard ends, and, you know, whatever kind of ending for that show looks like, and what the future kind of looks like from there. It's funny, I just thought of a really interesting one, but I'll save that theory for a future week. But as far as the Wish goes, yeah, I mean, that really is an underexplored area of the Star Trek timeline. And I guess, I mean, I don't know if it was ever anything more than just the most rumoriest of rumors, but one of the early rumors about Star Trek Discovery was that it was going to be an anthology show, and that one of the seasons was going to be set during that time period, because Brian Fuller shares your fascination with that time period, Sam, and was like really interested in it and wanted to go back and do something there. But obviously, you know, that never came to pass.
Well, sure. And on that same vein, Kurtzman could pick up from that, because if we pick up, let's say, at the end of Star Trek VI or the very beginnings of post-Kittimer I, those earliest talks with the Klingons, that could be something where we're closing one generation and picking up the pieces. And right. That could also fit Kurtzman's view of what this younger group of cadets has to do.
And it does feel like, I mean, maybe Star Trek Picard is angling towards revisiting some of that area, some of that time period, perhaps a little later with some of the pictures that Terry Metalis has been putting on Twitter, Bosun's whistle from Star Trek II, the sign from the bar in Star Trek III, where McCoy tries to get transportation to the Genesis planet, kind of indicating that maybe there might be some kind of time travel shenanigans that end us back, you know, in that period between when we saw Kirk die in Generations and the beginning of Star Trek The Next Generation. But I guess we'll have to wait and see for probably at this point Star Trek Picard Season 3 to figure out if that's the case or not.
True. And is Terry not a Twitter gem?
When he posts
those things up, just love it. Just, I could eat that with a spoon. It's so good what he does.
Tease me all day long.
Yes.
All right. My wish this week is another listener submission. This one comes from our good buddy John Krikorian at Trek Profiles, at the Trek Profiles podcast. Go check him out. His wish is that in Star Trek Strange New Worlds, obviously we've seen a number of returning legacy characters already. Nurse Chapel, Dr. Mbenga, Cadet Uhura. John would also like to see a return for another TOS legacy character, this case being Yeoman Janice Rand, as played in TOS by Grace Lee Whitney. And for the Strange New World show to kind of give that character a bit more of an arc than the original series had, make Yeoman Rand a bit more of a fleshed out character, Rand being this character who was in early season one of TOS. Grace Lee Whitney had a very serious situation with one of the producers, who she never named, who assaulted her, and she was fired shortly thereafter. And so the character, even though she's in a number of these early episodes, never really had the opportunity to get established, never really had the opportunity to, I mean, we never really even learned anything about Yeoman Rand, where she was from, what she liked to do. You know, she was very much just a plot device in many of these episodes. And so John would like, and I think this is a great wish, would be for, or, you know, maybe this is a Strange New World season 3 or 4 thing for Janice Rand to show up on, or maybe it's a final season thing where Janice Rand shows up on the Enterprise and we get a bit more to the character than we got in TOS, as both a homage and a way of honoring Grace Lee Whitney's portrayal of Rand and all of the kind of missed opportunities and potential that there was from that character, which was so sadly squashed when Grace Lee Whitney was sadly fired from the show, which was not her fault, you know. So yeah, I think that's a terrific theory, and I would love to see that happen. Sam, what do you think?
You know, one of the million reasons why Star Trek is as great as it is lies in the fact that 55 plus years on now, we can go back, the producers can go back, and they can re-examine characters and put them in situations where 50 plus years ago, we didn't get character episodes about Uhura or Sulu or Chekov, or we maybe got a touch on Scotty. And not even to mention Rand. So the fact that we can now fast forward and drop characters into new shows, and I think all of us know that the care that's going to be put into Strange New Worlds is an example of character development that we're going to see Uhura, Mabinga, Nurse Chapel. We're going to see these characters, we're going to see these folks fleshed out and really given some stuff to do. Rand is a fantastic example of someone in that last season. I think we can all dream ahead to what that transition may look like. It's probably one of the few Star Trek shows that we think about the end. And how does the end move
right.
from the end of one into the beginning of the next? So to have Rand pick up and give her a fleshed out story versus just, whenever I think of Rand, I think of her standing behind Kirk or being assaulted or crying in the episode Mary. Mm-hmm. You're right, plot devices that did not do the character justice. We know there's a lot more there. And to be able to bring her back and do the same thing with her as a character that I know we're going to get with these other legacy characters, that's the joy of Star Trek, that we can go back and that the producers can go back and we can right wrongs that 50 years ago they didn't even think about. But now in hindsight, we can go back and see a correction of these characters and really see a full arc. I think that's the extraordinary thing about it.
Do you have a wish or a theory for Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, or Prodigy that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek or email them to me at weeklytrek@thetricordertransmissions.com, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Sam Nelson, for joining me today. Sam, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
I'm easily findable on Twitter, at SLNelson77.
And you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, Sam. Thank you to all of my listeners, and until next week, live long and prosper.